We are back with everybody's favorite auction podcast. This is Auction Talk. We're recording this at our normal time this week, which is good. I'm not in a bedroom with a pink painting, which is okay, but I'm in more comfort zone this week. I was looking at the agenda before the call, and there's a lot of ground to cover. As always, I'll start here. Nick, welcome back. What's new? How are you?
I'm good, man. Got through the Easter weekend with the kids and the family, and back for another Monday. Trying not to fall for too many April Fool's Day jokes here on this April 1st Monday that we're recording. How about you?
I made the mistake of popping on LinkedIn and getting wrapped up in some stupid joke of somebody else's, and I was like, what am I doing? But yeah, we're recording this on April Fool's Day. I'm doing well, recovering a little bit from Easter. I think my biggest beef with Easter is the candy. We did, you know, the baskets and everything, and my toddler was like super jacked. Like, it was like kind of a tactic to get her to bed. It was like, hey, you got to go to bed because you're going to get your Easter basket with special surprises in it tomorrow. And she's like, okay, Dad. And she like went to bed. No problem. Woke up, you know, is the Easter basket here? I'm like, yes, it is. Let's go down. You know, I'm super excited about it. But what I didn't take into account and consider is just like the candy component, because that becomes the thing that the whole day revolves around. And so you're just like, I was like battling this candy thing, and it's not even Halloween. So I don't want to sound like an old man, but maybe I figure out an alternative to the candy thing, or maybe I can just let my daughter's teeth rot out one day, or I don't know. Did you have candy problems at your place?
Dude, you don't even know, man. I'm going to double down on the old man talk. First of all, can we spread out the dang candy holidays? Like, it's like Thanksgiving's not a candy or it's Halloween is candy. Then Thanksgiving's not a candy holiday, but it's like a massive junk food holiday, which is fine, but it's sandwiched in there. Christmas, same thing. You got Valentine's Day, candy galore. You got Easter, candy galore. Like, everything is candy, man. And it's like it's easy to give other people's kids candy, right? Because you don't have to deal with the aftermath of it. But man, that's a constant battle here. And my oldest daughter has, like, she can't really have a lot of sugar. Like, it messes her up. She has some sensitivity. So it's even worse for us. It's like, oh crap, here comes another holiday. Like, how are we going to navigate this? But I feel your pain, dude. I'm glad Easter's over, because I don't know the next candy holiday. Like, it's a while. I think we have a nice little gap here.
Yes. This morning I was happy my wife did this. I typically, as she's feeding the baby, I try to like get all of the stuff and put it out in her car. And I noticed an extra bag, and I like peeked in the extra bag, and it was like a bag just full of candy. And I was like, oh, and she's like, yeah, I'm taking it to our office and giving it out. I was like, that's a good move. She was like, I left a few pieces, but like the hoard is gone. And I'm like, that's probably the best way to do it. Let's get the candy out of the house. Right. Because what happened? We end up eating it. And it's like, exactly. I'm like, this time next Monday, if all that candy was here, you know, it's like 5 pounds. It's like, do I want 5 pounds because of candy? Because I can't stop eating it. No. So like, I don't know. This is a public service announcement, and I don't want to sound like a curmudgeon, but let's maybe one candy holiday a year.
Yeah, I'm on board with that, man. And this is why the dad bod exists right here. what you just described is why the dad bod exists.
I don't need to cancel my week of worth of workouts because I'm throwing Reese's Pieces down my throat at, you know, noon on a Monday. But
exactly.
Anyways, so before we get into the review of your auctions, I thought it would be cool to, like, maybe we'll start this week with a topic. And one of these topics that I think a lot about is just like historical relevance of players, and then you match that with positions. I think part of what I try to do with content is try to debunk narratives at any way possible. And it's kind of like on the basketball side, it's like, don't collect big men, you know, they'll never, you know, gain their value, or they'll never hold their value. And then I think with football cards, it's like, well, this is a quarterback driven league. You can only collect quarterbacks if you want them to hold their value. And I think I was listening back to our conversation last week, and you had mentioned Barry Rice and Jerry Sanders, how they're like the two most valuable players of the 90s. and it got in the most collected players, and it got me to think like, that's true. And then I went to Card Ladder and looked at their charts and I was like, okay, that's not only true, but like both of these players aren't quarterbacks. It's a receiver and a running back. So before we like get into it, like there's kind of like the tee up. Do you think about that at all? Just like how, like, you know, decades ago, the top players were non-quarterbacks. Does like, what are your thoughts on that in general? Do you think that impacts the way we should think about cards now?
Yeah, for sure. First off, I don't know if you caught it, but you said Barry Rice and Jerry Sanders. So I want to make
Did I really?
People know we're talking about Barry Sanders and Jerry Rice.
But, that's Monday after Thanksgiving.
Hey, Barry and Jerry, I get it, man. They flow. But yeah, I think about that too. And you know, it's super interesting. And I think there's a couple of things I go back to. Like, I think one is if you're like a highlight guy, like if highlights get you juiced, like Barry Sanders highlights are way more fun to watch than Troy Aikman highlights, right? Like Troy Aikman's dropping back in the pocket and throwing the ball every time. Like it's the same thing over and over, but the catch is exciting to watch. Like the run is exciting to watch. Like Barry Sanders juking three guys and then spinning on the other four and running 70 yards for a touchdown is a lot more, it gets you a lot more hyped than a pocket passing QB maybe. And same for the receiver. Jerry Rice wasn't as flashy, but he was so just fundamental and smooth and just kind of finesse, picked you apart and was just so consistent and dominant game to game. And I think both guys were kind of doing things that nobody in their position was doing at the time. Jerry is easy. Like if you look at any all-time receiver list, like it starts, it's okay, who's after Jerry Rice? Like every list starts with Jerry Rice. So it's hard to not think about him when you think about the GOATs, because he's just in your face all the time whenever you look at any historical significance for the sport period. And Barry Sanders is up there too. He had a shorter career, but he averaged like 99.8 yards a game, something like that, like right under 100 yards per game. And everybody just kind of, he's kind of a what if guy. Like, man, he was on a terrible team his whole career and he still put up 100 yards a game and all these crazy stats. And, you know, that's probably why he left early, because he was on such a bad team. Kind of wanted to protect his health, but a little bit different stories between the two, but also very similar with just being dominant in their era. And also you touched on this being a QB driven league. And I think there is something to that. Back when they played, it wasn't necessarily a QB driven league the way it is now. It's like all QBs now. And I mean, just to kind of expand on that, like the shortened life of wide receivers and running backs today, kind of there's very little chance that any of Jerry Rice's records are ever going to be touched. And I doubt anybody touches any of Barry Sanders' numbers. You know, he might not be number one on everything because of his shortened career, but he had some huge numbers. And the shelf life of wide receivers and running backs today, it's going to be hard to touch those records. So I think that makes those guys that have those numbers even more significant, because people feel like they're going to hold up for the long term.
I don't want to go too far off this topic, but I think this is interesting, because I think so much of what we're talking about with like YouTube and just feeling is based on nostalgia. And I think, you know, it's crazy, but we're over 30 years, three decades from when these guys were playing, but they're the players, maybe because they were more exciting than the quarterbacks of that era, that represent the highest collected cards of that era. And even with a Barry Sanders, when you want to like think about like statistics and top of the list, well, Barry Sanders had a shortened career, but in that decade that he played, he had some of the best highlights. And we see that too with like basketball and basketball collecting and cards. It's like there's a reason why people put a lot of money in Penny Hardaway and other players that might not have had these long careers but had these moments. So it's hard right now, and we're going to talk about some of these players, but it's hard right now to forecast like what people are going to be feeling and thinking in relation to where they want to put their money on the sports card front 30 years from now. But I don't know. Like, to me, it's like the simple stuff. It's like if a player right now makes you really excited, regardless of the position that they play, and they routinely do things that transcend the sport, like catch ridiculous passes or run for 60 yards to win games. Like, maybe those are the and you're a fan of those players, maybe like those are the opportunities to take a little bit of a mental note and be like, I love this player, they're doing exciting things. People might not be responding to them by, you know, spending thousands of dollars on their cards regularly, but that might be a chance for you to get in front of maybe some potential trends down the road, especially if you have a bunch of conviction around that player.
Yeah, and I think there's something to that. Like, I think right now when wide receivers and running backs are active, people are a little more hesitant to buy their cards because it's just a matter of time before they get hurt or their career is just done, right? Like, their prime is so short these days, and it's so easy for those guys to get hurt or just replaced for better, you know, whatever contract situations, whatever it is, or it's very dependent on who they play for. Like, there's so many variables to a good wide receiver and running back that it's kind of quote unquote risky to buy those cards while they're active from just a financial standpoint. So when they're retired, I think people get a little more excited about them because their legacies are already established and the risk is gone. I mean, unless they do something stupid post-career, which we've seen can definitely happen. But the risk is much, much lower, and you already know what you're dealing with. And then if you have nostalgia, somebody else has nostalgia. So I think that's definitely something to consider. And right now is probably, you know, if they're in the middle or kind of later end of their career and not much is happening, this might be the best time to buy them in the next 10 years.
100%. Curious. I know there were some notes just on some players, but my question to you is, what current or recently retired non-quarterback players do you think have the greatest opportunity to be the most collectible? And you have a slew of guys that you wrote down. Maybe if you want to like run through those and then give like a reason why, or just anything there. I think this is interesting.
Yeah. So it's funny. I talked about this in my newsletter. It was probably like December. It was just something that I was thinking about and kind of, you know, brought up, and I threw some names in there. So I stole some of those and I added to them. But here's the list. And this is, there's definitely guys you could add to this list, I'm sure, but this is just kind of who came to my mind. Larry Fitzgerald, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, LeSean McCoy, and Christian McCaffrey. Those were guys. You might notice I only had two running backs on there. You could throw Adrian Peterson on there. I think he's kind of already having a moment, though. Like, I don't know. Like, he's not under the radar enough for me, I guess you could say. But I think he's going to have long-term value. LeSean McCoy is probably a weird one to a lot of you, but I think his cards are, like, dirt cheap, which is part of the reason I put him on there. It comes back to the highlights. Like, he was one of the shiftiest running backs I can remember watching. I'm 37, so this is, you know, if you're 55, you might have other people on your list. But LeSean McCoy, I mean, was a highlight, a human highlight reel, was a dual threat, had some monster years, like played with some memorable teams with the Eagles. I just think he's an easy guy to have nostalgia for, and he's super cheap. And then McCaffrey, I think, you know, he might be kind of at the top of – value-wise, the top of his market right now. So maybe right now is not the time to buy him, but I do think he's somebody people are going to remember for a long time because, you know, he's had some runs with the 49ers, just how good of a dual threat running back he is. The other receivers you could probably kind of draw a lot of similarities to, but really it's just guys that have been dominant and are going to be at the top of all the all-time records. Tyreek Hill, probably a little bit of a different than a lot of those guys, but he's just flashy, right? He's putting up the stats, but he's also just different with how fast he is and how small he is and how elusive he is. But all those other guys on the list are putting up monster numbers. And I think they're going to be top, you know, 30 in all-time categories when it's all said and done.
So you bring up LeSean McCoy, and I had to go into Card Ladder, and I'm presenting this on the screen for anyone watching the video version. But it's funny, as I was evaluating and buying some 2012 Prizm Golds, like I saw the sale, and I hadn't thought about LeSean McCoy in a minute, but then I saw the sale, and this happened on, it was a fixed price sale. And I know it's auction talk. We talk about auction results, but sometimes we talk about fixed price sales when they can help us paint a picture. It was a 2012 Prism LeSean McCoy Gold Prism PSA 9, and it sold on January 6th of this year for $1,500, which these types of sales are super interesting to me because you've got a player that is likely not going to make the Hall of Fame, but is in an important set, limited to 10 copies, and it commands, you know, $1,500. Where I think if you're, whatever your motive is, let's say you're a McCoy collector, that justifies the purchase. You're an Eagles collector, that justifies the purchase. But like, let's say you're like a team or a parallel collector, and you're maybe not necessarily collecting the best sets or the best everybody in 2012 Prism Gold. This is a topic that continues to come up. It's not intentional. This Nick said something that reminded me of it. But I think about like you getting to this card and seeing like it was for $1,500. Like the fact that like you see him running in his Eagles uniform on the card, and you're probably reminded, you know what, like LeSean McCoy was really good. And then you go down the rabbit hole of looking at his numbers. Then you go down the rabbit hole of like looking at his YouTube highlights and seeing all the hype around him. Those types of things, when you're making purchases on like from cards in sets that really matter, I think help increase not only the demand for those players in that moment in time, but the value of those cards. And so as you're talking about McCoy, I was like, that it's weird. I was just looking at cards and McCoy came up, and this was an example I wanted to call out.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I looked up his Bowman Chrome, his 09 Bowman Chrome Gold Refractor, which is out of 50, in a raw sold for $110 in January, which is insane. I mean,
what does that say? What does that mean? What does that mean, do you think?
I mean, it feels like a almost no risk, high reward play if you're just wanting to start a fun collection of just nostalgic guys, right? It's not like he only had two or three good years. Like he had a long career, put up a lot of yards. And that gold prism, it's interesting. It's interesting because it also makes me wonder about the other side. Like maybe these guys are only going to have one to three cards that are going to really matter, you know, and it's cards like the 2012 gold prism, because it's a first prism set, first gold prism, all that good stuff. You know, maybe there's just less cards that will be important for those guys. But man, at $110 for a Bowman Chrome Gold Refractor of a guy like that, like I don't see how you could lose money in the long term on something like that.
I think these types of conversations are fun. I love talking about old players like LeSean McCoy that we haven't mentioned in a while, and just trying to bring up things to get everyone to think. I want to segue into, we didn't get a chance to do this last week, but a recap on the Wharf's auctions that ended last night. I have not gone back and looked at any of the results from the auctions last night, so I'll be learning something new as you kind of run through it.
Yeah, so we sold 96 cards, which is the second week in a row we sold exactly 96 cards. They did a total of $95,038.80, so almost $1,000 a card. Average sale, excuse me, but it was carried by the Rice Rubies, the 1998 Rice Rubies, Jerry Rice Rubies, PSA 7, sold for $24,600, which the last sale was a 6 for $19,800 in July. So that makes sense based off of that sale. But yeah, that was a really good number. The consignor was really happy with that. It was one of the highest selling cards in the auction. If there wasn't so many massive Dennis Rodman cards, it might have been the highest selling card. Then we had the Kobe Dunk and Go. It was a BGS 9.5, did $2,640, which is about in line. It was a min gem. The Jack Nicklaus, the 03 Sign of the Times Platinum out of 25, BGS 9, did $630. The Brandon Roy, 2006 Topps Chrome Gold, the 96 throwback. That was a PSA 9. It did $348, which is pretty solid for a Brandon Roy card, Brandon Roy rookie card. And then the Greg Maddux 1999 Epic Signatures PSA 9 did $420. And I want to talk about that because I want to make sure I don't want to lead people on to make it seem like our cards always sell for more than everywhere else and cards only go up and all this good stuff. Like, I think it's important to show examples of cards that don't go up and maybe dissect why that might be. But this one, we talked about it on the last show, and I think it's a significant card. It's a scarce card not super rare, but it doesn't show up very often, so pretty scarce. But there was a raw sale in December for $850, and this PSA 9 did $420. So it got me looking at why, and that $850 sale was a fixed price sale. And I think that's important. Like, when a car doesn't show up for very long and there's one sitting on fixed price and somebody happens to want or need that card at that point, and that's their only option, and the condition looks okay, they're going to spend what they have to spend. So it doesn't mean fixed price is always better than auction or vice versa. It just means in some scenarios when there's nothing else to be had and somebody needs that card at that time and they can justify spending that price, even if it's higher than what prices have been, they'll buy it, right? So maybe we lost a buyer on that card and there just isn't a ton of buyers for that card, so the price kind of dipped a lot. But it got me thinking about, you know, the difference of a fixed price listing versus an auction, and why would one sell higher than the other, and what those reasons could be.
I love it. I feel like I'm getting such a better pulse for what's actually happening with cards at auction and in fixed price just by doing this and spending some more time in the data. I was going to bring up, because it is WrestleMania week, I was going to bring up a topic regarding The Rock. I'm going to hold it and tease it out because I had a conversation before this that will be on Friday. So if you are interested in learning more about The Rock, the Great One, or the Final Boss, as they're calling him now, and his cards, go check out the conversation that will be recorded for, or that will go live tomorrow on the main feed. I don't want to double dip, so I'm going to hold that back. But where I want to get to next is, we talked about 2012 Prizm Golds last week, and I think I'm the most fascinated about sets and parallels that are driving demand and driving, I think the set collector drives so much of the activity in our hobby. I think you're in an interesting and unique position where you're probably, you've got kind of a bullseye view on cards coming in, cards selling, and you're probably looking at it more than 99% of the people listening to this, just based on your role and what you do. I'm curious, are you seeing anything specifically? Are there any sets, products, or parallels that you've noticed that are getting maybe more traction in the last like 6 to 12 months that might be, that might not have gotten a lot of attention before?
Yeah. So there's always some won't really get people excited, so I won't bring those up, but some interesting ones. And then there's some that, you know, I got to be careful because I don't want to give away people's plans and, you know, have people leverage that against them, right? Like, that's something to be conscious of. But one that comes to mind is,
can I ask a question before you dive in? Yes. How do you walk that line? Because you're getting a lot of information and seeing a lot of strategies, and the strategies might not be great, but the person might, but like, how do you balance that?
It's so tough, man. Honestly, it's just, some of it's just experience. It's putting things out there. And when people get pissed that I put something out there, it makes me rethink, okay, maybe that's something I should keep on the down low, you know, because of X and Y reason, right? Like, usually the more expensive maybe the set could be, or the parallel or whatever, and maybe how far somebody is in the chase or something like that are probably variables as to whether or not I, you know, should put that out there or not. But because, you know, if it's more expensive and it's harder to find, like, people could leverage that against this person easier or these people easier. But if it's, you know, a more common set and it's easier cards to find, like, somebody's not really going to get hurt with putting that out there, if that makes sense. But it is a fine line, and there's not a definitive answer to that. But I think, you know, one set that comes out, we've talked about it before, and that's why I kind of dive into it more, is the 2008 Topps Chrome Red Refractor out of 5 from the basketball set. People have been chasing this run for a while. There's only five copies of each player for the red refractor, so it's a hard chase. I would imagine it's going to take these people a long time, but also, why I want to bring it up is because a lot of these just popped up recently on eBay auction. I don't know if you can bring up your card ladder, but there was some. This is a dead giveaway. When you see guys like Brendan Haywood selling for $2,200, Brandon Rush and Maurice Spite selling for over $1,500, they are rookies, but a lot of these, I would say 5 to 8 of these sold within like a couple of weeks of each other on auction on eBay, and they all did like $1,500 or more. And type in delete refractor. Oh yeah, delete basketball. Yeah, there you go. And do it out of 5. Type in /5. That'll narrow it down. Yeah, so you can see a bunch of those, like Sean Marion. What's crazy is that Kevin Durant PSA 10 did 6,700, which sounds like a good number, but not when you see like a raw Sean Marion doing 2,350. But that's the impact of a set or parallel collector, right? Like they might never see another Sean Marion top chrome red refractor out of 5 come up, so they have to pull the trigger. And I wonder, I'm curious if the same person bought all these or if there's a couple people that were going after him. Like I would imagine these people probably know each other by now too, unless they just started chasing this. But I'm always curious of the behind the scenes, like if these guys are talking to each other about these cards and helping each other finish their sets or you know, kind of what's going on behind the scenes. But yeah, that's a big dead giveaway there. A $1,500 Maurice Spites Topps Chrome Red Refractor. That's got to be the highest selling Maurice Spites card ever, I would imagine.
100%. This is the type of stuff I personally find the most interesting, like a $2,800 Joe Johnson in a Hawks Uni Red Refractor. So is your speculation this is like, there's a couple people that are out here trying to build the entire set. Is that what you're saying? Or do you not know?
I would say I would guess they're like, if I can do it, I'll do it. Otherwise I'm just going to go for like the guys from my team or the guys, you know, they kind of have their criteria that they'll start with. And then it's like, if I can do more, I'll do more, but if I can't, I'm not going to go crazy. But you know, these are all like random dudes too. They're not from the same team. They're not like these guys on the surface don't seem to really have. Who's Craig Smith?
That's what I'm saying. Craig I'm like Smith. A nerd and I do not remember Craig Smith. Yeah,
I know. I've never heard of Craig Smith, the NBA basketball player, and his sold for $1,500 on Valentine's Day. So yeah, it's super interesting. This as random as these players are, like this has to be somebody going for the whole complete run. But if I was doing this run and I found out somebody else was doing it, I don't know what I'd do, because there's only so many people are going to be able to have a chance to complete this.
Dude, this is insane. This is like the little pockets of what's happening in the hobby. That's just insanity. So everybody go to Card Ladder and just type in 2008 Topps Chrome Red Refractor and look at some of the previous sales. It will freaking blow your mind. You had talked about it, but it took me to go to Card Ladder to go through. And I'm going to save this, spend some time with it later tonight, but this is insanity right here. Yes.
And also I urge you, if you have no interest in these cards, don't be a jerk. Don't go buy these cards and hold them over people's heads. Like, but it's fun to look at, because this is why I thought the 2006 through 2009 Bowman Chrome Red out of 5s from football might be significant, because of what's happening here in this market with the 08 Red out of 5 from Topps Chrome Basketball. So it's just fun to be able to see that stuff and try to make correlations yourself. Whether, you know, who knows if I'm going to be right or wrong on that, but it's fun to do that stuff.
So jumping into the world of sports, I can tell you right now, one thing I'll shout all of you out who are listening, even though I'm not on board and I'm not a fan. I think they're well deserving. I think it's been a long road for Purdue basketball fans, and you are in the Final Four. So congratulations. I think there's a lot of Final Four storylines going on, and maybe we'll get to them. But I gotta before we even get to the men's side, man, tonight, as we record this, Iowa LSU women's. Yeah. I mean, sign me up. Like, I'm not sure there's a game I want to watch more than that one in anything right now. Storylines galore. Are you going to be tuning in? Are you just as excited about that?
I mean, I never can guarantee a tune in with two little kids. You're probably in the same boat, but I'm going to do my best to watch them. The good thing is I have two girls, so it's like a little bit easier to convince my wife, like, hey, we got to get into women's sports for the girls, you know? It's at 6 o'clock my time. So I might be able to catch the beginning. And then, you know, it's getting into bedtime. So we'll see. But the game after is UConn and USC, which is Paige, Beckers, and Juju. Those four teams are probably the most exciting to watch, arguably, in the tournament. I mean, South Carolina is obviously fun to watch. They're undefeated. There's some fun teams to watch. But, I mean, for probably the three of the four most talented girls in the whole tournament are playing tonight, and only two of them are going to go to the Final Four. So, yeah, I'm going to watch as much as I can for sure.
Yeah, so excited about that. And then I guess we're down to four teams on the men's side right now. How do you feel like it's going to shake out? It's a lot easier to maybe predict when you've got four teams as opposed to 64. But how do you feel right now just in terms of who you think the best team is?
I mean, I'm going to take the easy answer and say UConn, but it's UConn just looks so dominant, man. They just look like, there's some years where you're like, man, I don't know what team's going to win it, or like, this team might be the best, but I could see them losing. And it just feels like UConn is just running their way through the tournament. And I don't know. I don't see any of these teams giving them any major troubles, but that's the beauty of one and done. You know, it's anybody can have a really good night and catch the other team on a bad night and win. The storyline is NC State, though, the 11 seed. They had to play the like play-in game, right, or whatever they call it, the first round. They had to play that, and here they are in the Final Four, and this DJ Burns kid is – dude, he's so fun to watch. He's like a 6'9 center that plays like way below the rim and just finesses his way to buckets left and right. Like, these are the type of guys that get me excited about college basketball in the tournament, because he's like, it's hard to imagine him having any type of long pro career with just his size and his style of play. But he's having his moment now, so you get super pumped to watch a guy like that.
Yeah, I even saw Jokic give him some flowers. Yes. He greatness acknowledging greatness of the versatility of the big man. So that's super fun. I think the group of four where we lay, I mean, in, you know, Alabama for that matter, I think this group of four is, I feel like anything can happen. It's easy. I think UConn probably has the edge just based on just, they've just been beating people like they stole something, but I don't know. I feel like anything can happen, and that's what makes for a good Final Four. So I'm probably the most excited to watch this Final Four in a long time, because it just doesn't feel like it's super straightforward.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, I would pick UConn, but it's teams that, that aren't in it all the time. I mean, UConn has been recently. I don't think Alabama's been in a Final Four for a long time. NC State hasn't, Purdue hasn't. So, you know, it feels like a fresh round of four, even though there is kind of a favorite in UConn, but I always pull for the upset. If UConn doesn't win, I'll be even happier, but if they do win, I won't be surprised.
No doubt. Definitely. If you're interested in sending your cards to Nick, promo code stacking50, we've got the link in the show notes. Want to hit on no recent comps, which is what we do typically at this time in the recording. What is a topic from the newsletter that you want to maybe go a little deeper on from this past week?
Yeah. So the Ask Me Anything was about, they wanted me to elaborate on, I guess I talked about it last episode or the episode before, just kind of, I think I mentioned grades not mattering as much today for collectors as they have in the past. And that's more of a hunch and just a feel for what I've seen and kind of talked to people about. I don't have any data to support that. If you can find that data, I would love to see it. I love seeing that type of stuff. But it got me thinking, like, you know, when, and I want to ask you your opinion, if you have a line here, like, when does the grade matter for you and when does it not? Like, do you have criteria on, you know, certain players, certain parallels, rarity, all that kind of stuff? Like, how do you view that whole situation?
I think era plays a big role. I would say grade matters more to me in the ultra modern era and less in the 90s era. I will say I'm over indexed on more modern and ultra modern as opposed to like that on the 90s side, just based on my collection. So I think I'm valuing maybe the grade a little bit more than I'd like to. I will also say, like, maybe a specific example, and it's a card that I recently sold on PWCC Weekly. And this is my maybe a good way to think for me to like frame it up, where I think when you move past like the manufactured rarity of 10 copies, that the grade grade matters a lot more to me. So like if I'm buying a gold refractor from Finest or Chrome, I'm probably since there's 50 copies, I'm going to like demand that I get a 10 on that, just because I feel like that's a better storage of value as opposed to like there being a pop of like, you know, 29s or whatever. And so then when I move down to like Prism Golds, the grade matters much less to me, although of course I want 10s. Then I think I'm going to make this like super complicated, but like the card that I'm thinking about, and I sold this, and I sold the 2022 John Cena Gold Prism first year John Cena. It was a PSA 6, and for the life of me, like, I know everybody says this, they're like, this card is undergraded or whatever. That card, like, I specifically looked at, and it had some damage, and I just didn't like the justification of a 6. I wasn't sure about, especially just based on reading the standards, but that's for another story. If that card was in an 8 for me at minimum, the likeliness of me selling it would have been like, there's probably no chance I would have, but I felt like when I needed to move cards to get other cards, I felt like that card was on the chopping block just based on the grade. And my mentality was like, I'd love to get this card again at some point, but if I do get this card again, I certainly would like a higher grade. So I think it's not straightforward. Like I mentioned, the era matters, the parallel matters, all that stuff factors in. But I think the easiest way for me to think about it is like era, and then also like the number of cops. Those are the two like push and pull usually for me.
Yeah. And I love that. That makes sense. And it's interesting because, you know, just even hearing you talk about it, it seems like it's kind of fluid card to card, grade to grade almost. Like you talked about the Cena, and there's only 10 copies, and you had a PSA 6, which I would imagine might be the lowest graded copy.
For sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that probably matters. Like when you're talking about the lowest graded copy versus, you know, an 8, like the grade does matter to you. You don't want the lowest graded copy, but you don't need a 10, right? Like, so there's nuances to every nuance, right? It's, so I think it's super interesting. And then I think it's person to person and how important that player is in your collection as well. Like, you know, if you're a Jerry Rice collector, you know, I bet there's some cards that you just want the card because it's Jerry Rice and he's your PC, and then you'll worry about the grade later. And that's why we see a lot of consolidation, is a lot of times people are getting the card in the grade that they can at the time for what they can afford. And then when they get to a point where they can swing for a higher grade, they might do that if their PC is in a place that they like and they don't really need other cards at the moment. Like I know we saw Drake do that with the 03 Peyton Manning, Topps Chrome Gold X Fractor. He went from a 9 to a 10, you know, I can't speak for him, but I would imagine he was just at a place where he could bump that grade up. And like you said, it's probably feels like a better store of value for him having the 10 on that card, because I'd imagine there's a lot less 10s than there is 9s. So yeah, it's just an interesting conversation. I kind of took the angle of, I think it's starting to matter less in general, but it depends on the situation. Like, there's still people out there that are going to collect the highest grade of every card that they can. Like, look at the 90s MJ market, like the PSA 10 market. Everybody's going nuts for the PSA 10 because they want all of those cards in PSA 10, and there's limited, you know, PSA 10s. So I think we're always going to see that. But I think maybe entering into a card, like if it's your first time buying the card, I would say in general, the grade probably matters less than if it's a card, you know, you've had or you've enjoyed and you just want to bump up the grade, and the grade starts to become a little bit more important for you. But it got me thinking too, like, I think everything that's in my collection that I keep is graded. And I think for me, it's, I like the consistency of just having them in slabs, right? I just feel like they're better protected. Whether it's Beckett or PSA, I think most of my stuff is in PSA just coincidentally, but just the actual storage of it in a slab, and just the consistency from card to card, I think is important, but a little more important than the grade in that situation.
So one final note from me, I will say the grade can be like the fuel that I need in order to like get me to make the move to purchase the card, or helps accelerate that process, I guess. And one example, I was looking at it today because I was like, shit, I got to make sure I'm home to sign this, which this card should be in my possession hopefully by the time this goes live. But I bought a 2012 Robert Mathis PSA 10 Prism Gold out of 10. And I felt like it was a card I had looked at and wanted, and I felt compelled to make the move to get it because I was like, there's no other chance ever for me to get a PSA 10 of this card. Like, this is it. So like, get into the negotiation and try to get this card. And so if that card was in a lower grade, like a PSA 8 or a 9, maybe I wouldn't have felt as compelled to move and get it. But it was the no recent comps portion of it compared, and you layer in the PSA 10 component of it. And it's like, when I put those factors together, it was like, all right, this makes sense to me to go pursue this card now. So yeah, I think gem cards like can cause collectors to move quicker than maybe they anticipated. So I wanted to make sure I called that out.
Yeah, that makes sense too, 100%. And there is no perfect answer to it, but I think it's an interesting conversation, and I feel like there's a shift which gets me excited. I feel like that means like there's more collectors out there, right? Like we all say we need more collectors. I think we have more collectors, and I think you can see that in these type of situations where, you know, a PSA 7 Jerry Rice Rubies goes for 25,000. It's not the highest grade. There's 3 or 5 PSA 7s. But it did a huge number. I mean, it's one of the highest grades, but it's the card that matters to these people. And the highest grade probably would sell for a good chunk more because it's the highest grade. But when you're dealing with 2 to 3 grades that are right there in the middle and there's multiple copies of each, like they're probably going to be within a pretty good consistent range of value of each other, to where the grade doesn't matter as much on those type of situations.
Was there a card from this that sold last week that hits the no recent comps qualifications?
Yes. Yeah. So, well, we had it in the newsletter. It was the 97 Skybox premium player, Kevin Garnett, PSA 10. So the KG, it was a pop 3. It sold for, it sold on Sunday on PWCC for $1,890. The last sale was last May. So not even a year ago. Sold for $610. So 3x'd in a year, less than a year. Like I said, it's a pop 3. It's only the third PSA 10 public sale of that card ever. So I think that, you know, matters. The card itself is somewhat rare. It's the pack odds are one in every 192 packs, which I think that set had a Thunder and Lightning, I think, was in that set. And that had the same pack odds. And then what else? I think Golden Touch was in that. And that one I think was twice as rare. I think it was one in every like 350 packs or something like that. So just other cards you might've heard of, that you might know the values of that you can kind of compare to just to see kind of how rare those are. Cause those aren't numbered obviously. But I think we're just seeing a movement in the 90s, insert and parallels in PSA 10s and probably more so in basketball starting with because of what Jordan does to the market, right? Everybody knows that Jordan PSA 10s are going nuts. So there's always a trickle down off that. So I think all of those variables probably played into that sale.
All right, let's move over into the cards that we want to talk about from an auction perspective. And then we're going to get into the cards that Nick is selling. Maybe we need to reorganize this so I'm not always going first, but we're going to go first because that's the way it is on the format. We're sticking to the format. Hey, little how the sausage is made. We prepare for this. We are professional auction talkers. We have a whole document that Nick and I go back and forth on, and that's a little just how the sausage is made, and we try to be as prepared as possible for all of you because you're out there giving us your time. So just wanted to let you know we're sticking to the format.
And also we're old and routine matters.
I'm getting back into my routine finally after being away last week and being in another city in another time zone. And I know a lot of you out there are travelers for work professionally and admire your dedication to grinding and being on planes, trains, automobiles, all those things. But man, I was like, I told my wife this morning, she goes, do you wish you were in Denver this time or this week? And I just told her, no, like I'm a creature of habit. I'm happy. I don't need to navigate foreign terrain. So I'd rather be here talking with Nick, doing auction talk. And that's what we're doing. And the first card, I picked this card because I just got some nostalgia, not necessarily for the card, but the player. And the card that is on the screen right now is the 2010 National Treasures Paul George rookie patch auto out of 99, BGS 9.5, ends in 6 days on PWCC Weekly. The event worn patch here, I looked at the card, man, and I feel like we're on the other side of this kind of as Pacers fans now, where we can appreciate what Paul George did during his time here. And this card, when I saw the patch, which looks like number or name patch, which is really sharp. And I look at this Adidas era jersey of the Pacers. And there were so many fun memories against LeBron in the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Paul George was ascending as a player a few years after this shot was taken in this card. And I look at that and I hadn't seen his auto in a while, but you know, when you live in a city and you're like, they're the star player, you tend to like see the autograph of the player on a lot of different things. And the autograph on here is just like bold blue 24. I looked at this card. I'm not even a big National Treasures fan. I really am not a big RPA fan, but like something about this card just spoke to me. I was like, damn, this is a sick card. And I love watching Paul George. Even now, the Pacers played the Clippers not too long ago and luckily beat them. It was a fun game to watch, but Paul George, like I've always admired his, like the way he can guard the perimeter. I've always admired how smooth he is. His mid-range jump shot is freaking deadly. And he's just got like, just this insane athleticism. Like to me, he's one of the best players of this generation. I might be biased because I had a front row seat for seeing him for so long, but it also is weird where it feels like he's underappreciated, especially now in the situation where you're with Harden and Leonard and what's going to happen with the Clippers. They were super hot and now they're not. And I don't know. I just wanted to I picked this card because I think it's sweet and I just wanted to spend some time because I don't think I've ever done it on Stacking Slabs, just to give Paul George some flowers. And I think he's just one of the special players from this era and super cool card for a Paul George collector or not.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's interesting to hear your perspective as a Pacers diehard, to hear how you felt about him while he was playing there and how you feel about him now that he's gone. And I mean, you said he's underappreciated and one of the better players. Like I think it was this year's draft class where a bunch of the guys coming in, when they were asked who their favorite player was, it was Paul George. And everybody was like, Paul George, you know, and there was like 3 to 5 of them. So, I mean, I think that matters. Like, I think that gives you maybe some type of insight into the younger collectors, who they're going to care about in 15 years. Like, you know, like I care about 90s players, but like the guys that are 21 years old weren't even alive in the 90s. So they might not care about 90s guys. They might care about guys like Paul George. So I think that's something interesting to consider. And if I remember right, Paul George was in a year where like there's not that many good cards out there, because 09 was the last year of Tops. So he doesn't have any Tops cards. And Panini didn't make much until 2012, right, with the Prism and stuff. So he has a few Panini cards. This has got to be his biggest, whatever base card, I guess. I would imagine. So the limited selection makes this card even better. But yeah, I think he's an underrated player overall. And they're a team I wouldn't want to face in the playoffs. They're one of those weird teams where I feel like they could lose early, or they could really make a run to the finals.
No doubt about it. I'm glad you called out the draft thing. I found that interesting too, which I think that helps display influence and the influence that his game has had on this younger generation, which is super cool. The next card is a completely oddball outside the box card, but we like to have fun here. And this card is the 2023 Topps Chrome Disney Red Kaleidoscope Refractor. And by the way, I haven't looked at the price on this again. Like, it was nothing when I picked this. And then now I'm looking at it out of five, PSA 10, Lotso the Hugging Bear from Toy Story 3. And the reason why I picked this card without knowing anything about this is I stumbled across this card and I just laughed because my toddler, as my infant, is in the background giving us a little color commentary. But we've been watching Toy Story 3 and we've just like been laughing so hard at, like, I just make fun of Lotso because he's like the villain. And just to see Lotso on a card like this is just funny. And like, this card ends the night this goes live, and this card has 10 bids for $1,008. So I know nothing about Disney cards, but like, if I'm collecting Disney cards because maybe I want to bond with my daughter, it would be this, right? I didn't even know like Topps Chrome Disney was a thing, but I just thought it was funny. Shout out to all you parents out there. Shout out to Lotso the Hugging Bear, even though he's a villain and a very bad guy and he got many chances of redemption, he still turned his back. What ended up happening, what was what he deserved, and that was being on the front of a trash truck and getting flies in his face. So I don't know, man. Oh, this is a weird one for me, but I had to put it out there.
I love it, man. I mean, first off, that's a lot of money. All right. That's a dad joke for you there if you didn't get that. Maybe this is the other out of five red that people are chasing. Maybe that's why it's $1,000. The 2003 or 23 Disney Topps Chrome. Maybe that's the other one. But yeah, that's fun, dude. It's almost frustrating because you mentioned, like, if I was going to start a collection with my daughter, like, maybe these are the type of cards I would chase. It's like, nope, I can't chase that one because it's way too much money. But maybe some of the more common parallels are probably a lot more affordable. But yeah, I saw that on your list and at first I didn't even connect the dots on who it was. I'm like, I'll just have to wait for the show. So I'm glad you gave that commentary on it, man. That's a funny card.
Do you know anything about these cards? Like, do these come?
I honestly didn't know they existed. I honestly didn't. I obviously know Toy Story and Lotso, but I didn't know these existed.
If you are a collector of these and you listen to this show, DM me. I would love to follow your page and just to learn more about them. I'm in that phase where it's like, you know, we have Disney Plus on all the time, so it would be fun to get educated on these. I'm sure there are less expensive versions of this card that are available, but man, this just made me laugh because we've been on a Lotso kick recently. Final card for me, I picked this card. It's WrestleMania week. Wanted to call one out. 2015 Topps WWE Undisputed NXT inline Becky Lynch. This is a non-parallel. It is a PSA 10 on PWCC, ends in the weekly auction on WrestleMania Sunday. There was a time where I had a purple out of 10, PSA 10 of this card that I ended up selling a while back. The reason why I wanted to call this card out, it was one, Becky Lynch is in WrestleMania, is very topical, facing Rhea Ripley, just had a book out, highly collectible wrestling superstar. But I wanted to call this out because there is so much narrative around what's a rookie card and what's not a rookie card in wrestling. And I'm of the camp that wrestling rookie cards like really don't matter because so much of it is narrative driven and up for interpretation. But I feel like the 2015 Topps Undisputed set is an interesting set because of the call out where it says first NXT card on the card itself, which is a fun disclaimer. And I almost view it like a Bowman's first or any of those other disclaimers we've seen on cards to like really identify this as a rookie card. So what I like about these cards too in 2015 Undisputed and the Undisputed line, which doesn't exist anymore because Topps doesn't have the license, but likely will at some point in the future. I just like I'm not a huge auto guy, but if it's an auto, I love auto on a thick paper-based card. And that's what Undisputed is. It's full of just cool images, a lot of autographs, no stickers. But yeah, this, it almost like whatever Becky Lynch is wearing now isn't in the, on the shot is nothing close to what she'd be wearing now, which is interesting. And so for someone who is, you know, brought in a lot of money to the WWE and has been such an instrumental figure of this era, I just think this is a super cool card. If you're a Becky Lynch fan or you're looking for a Becky Lynch piece, that's not going to necessarily break the bank. This is a pop 14. This would be a fun card to look at.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that about the first NXT on the card there. I had no idea. So I love learning about wrestling cards on this pod, man. And we like what other podcast talks about women's wrestling and Lotso from Toy Story. The last 4 weeks have been golf heavy. I mean, we talked about Caitlin Clark for like the first four straight episodes.
Yes, we did. Mention her name. We said Iowa basketball this time, but you just said Caitlin Clark. I had to drop it in.
I had to drop it in, man. She's our unofficial sponsor. I had to drop it in.
She is. Future goal is to get Caitlin Clark on Auction Talk live in the studio. We'll see. We'll see what strings we can pull. Probably none, but we all have goals. Your card next. Go through your spiel. I have a question as I'm looking at this card, but go for it. What are we looking at?
This is the 2000 Contenders Brian Urlacher rookie ticket auto. This is the base. It's a PSA 9. It ends Friday on eBay. But yeah, Urlacher, I mean, one of the best defensive players of all time. Beloved in Chicago. The set itself is obviously super important with Brady's rookie year. Urlacher is probably the second biggest name, at least rookie-wise, from that set. So I think that matters. And when you talk about important sets, I think there's always trickle down. So I think this is a card that people will just know about and remember and will be important for a long time. PSA 9, there's looks like there's 19 PSA 9s. So it's not like super rare. There's 11 PSA 10s, but there's only 243 graded between all the grading companies. So it's a lower print run card. I'd imagine some of those were graded more than once too. So keep that in mind. But just not a card that surfaces often of a very important defensive player from a very important set.
Okay. Very cool card. It's one that I didn't have it visualized in my head. I think Urlacher certainly just definitely in the era he played in was always at the top of the list with maybe like when you're talking about best linebackers, best defense, best linebackers, he was always like the 1B to Ray Lewis in that era. Always at the top of the conversation. He was like, he really was the identity for the Bears for so long. Not a card that like visually was like embedded in my mind and looking at this for the first time, like what are your thoughts on rookie cards, especially in football, when the players in the cards have like practice gear on? So Urlacher has like a white jersey and with no shoulder pads and has like Bears navy mesh shorts and he's got his helmet on. Like, what do you think about like this type of look on rookie cards?
Yeah, I know that's a great question. I think it depends on the overall selection for that player. If they're in practice gear and a lot of their stuff, I think it doesn't matter as much. And then it obviously depends on the set and the exact card. Like this is, I think because of this set, the 2000 playoff contenders, I don't think it matters as much at all. It's just a significant set. So I think the fact that it's just his card and it's his rookie card, I think is all that people need for this to be important. But it depends. Like you look at Brady and the majority of his rookie cards are in practice gear or Michigan jerseys. It's hard to find them in a game Patriots uniform. So I think those matter less. And then it's Brady. So like people just want Brady rookie cards. So it's like whatever you can get, you can get. But I think when it's a player where most of their stuff is not practice stuff like on the card, then I think it's less desirable if you have plenty of like uniform selection cards. What about you?
I think that makes sense. I will say like at a very much like lesser scale, I'm not going to say the card because I'm still wavering on it a little bit, but there is a card of a lesser known Colts player in a parallel that I appreciate that popped up, and it wasn't like a, it was not a break the bank type situation, but it was actually super affordable based on the circumstances. But like my, I was hesitant to pull the trigger because he was in a similar look. And I don't know, like, I think the Brady example is a good one when you look at his rookie inventory and just the makeup, and agree, like, it doesn't matter in a lot of instances. But for me, what I've learned about like my collecting, like the photography really matters. And I, not saying I wouldn't pull the trigger on something like this, but I very much prefer them, you know, being in a different look than just in the practice warm-up gear.
Yeah, I can totally see that argument. I'm looking at Urlacher's other rookie card selection just on Card Ladder, like what's sold. And it looks like a lot of his stuff is in the pro uniform. Like I'm looking, the one I'm looking at though that he's not is the 2000 Leaf certified mirror gold out of 30. He's in practice gear. That did a big number. But like his Bowman Chrome, he's in full uniform. His SP Authentic, it looks like it's from like a photo shoot because he's just standing there with his arms crossed, but he's wearing his uniform. So it looks like it's kind of more selection in his uniform, but for this one specifically, I just think the set will carry this card.
I think it's a good call out. All right, let's move on to your next couple here.
Yes, so there's two cards here. They're the 98 Ultra exclamation points, both PSA 10s, one of Jerry Rice and one of Barry Sanders. So these are two different listings. I think they end like Sunday on eBay, if I'm not mistaken. I love these cards for a lot of reasons. For one, like just talking about the design, like it's an acetate card, so you can see through it. And there's a bunch of exclamation points, right? Like dots all over this card. It's really, really cool in hand. I owned the Jerry Rice for a long time. And yeah, the dots are like, I don't know if that's like hollow foil or what that is, but it's actually pretty shiny in hand. Super, super cool card. Low pops on these. I think the Jerry Rice is a pop 15. And the Barry is a pop 13. So it's not super low, but relatively low. And these cards are super affordable. Like I think they're around $500 right now. They were a good chunk higher at one point, but I want to say they're around $500 right now. But what I love about these cards, I love this in all these situations, is I always look at the basketball and other sport variations. And there's not a baseball exclamation points. So I think that makes this card more significant or more interesting. There is a basketball from 98, but it's a totally different design. I mean, completely different. It's not acetate. It's like a regular looking card with like a basketball court kind of background and some funky design on it. But it's not like, in my opinion, it's not like a design that pops out at you. But the Jordan PSA 10 on that, it's a PSA or it's a pop 8. So it's half the pop. Sells for like 20 grand. And to me, it's like those multipliers. I don't care if it's Jordan to Jerry Rice. Like it's not the same, you know, tier of athlete all time, you know, globally. But I mean, I can't even do the math. That multiplier is so big, but it doesn't make sense to me. And that's as a football card collector from the 90s, that gets me super excited about a card like this.
I love it. I think if you go into the process and you investigate a player like Jordan's cards and you set the appropriate expectations with yourself that, yeah, this Barry Sanders card is likely nowhere, not going to ever sniff what this Jordan card is, but you can start thinking about multipliers across these cards and others and think about it. Typically, you'll find like this moment, especially if you have conviction around the player where you're just like, you know what, like this seems really cheap for now. Maybe in 5 years, this will increase in value, I think is a fair approach. But I think also too, it comes down to like, I've seen these cards, but I haven't like zoomed up and looked at these cards. And it's like, my impression of these cards is way higher than it was before we started talking about it, because I just took some time to like appreciate the aesthetics of it, which I think at the end of the day is going to drive more value than not. So just like bringing further awareness on what cards we think are cool and introducing those to other people typically helps in the process as well.
For sure. And it is like, these are super affordable. So, I mean, if if your favorite player is John Elway, I'm just as a lower tier example, I bet his PSA 10 is maybe a couple $100 depending on the pop. I haven't looked up his prices, but I bet it's super affordable. And then this is also a significant year with Peyton Manning and Randy Moss's rookie year. I don't know if Moss is in this checklist, but Peyton is for sure. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's an important card.
No doubt. Moving on to, I feel like he's made a few appearances on here, and it seems like this guy who was such a cast off for so long, feels I'm seeing more of his cards in my feed than not. It feels like there's some momentum around this guy who's got a massive dome and also a hell of a swing. Who are we looking at here, Nick?
Yeah, so this is the 96 Topps Chrome Refractor Barry Bonds PSA 9. So this is first year Topps Chrome, which is obviously significant. Big fan of this set across all sports, especially baseball and football, because they're usually a lot more affordable. Maybe not necessarily in this situation, but PSA 9 here, there's no PSA 10s, which you find oftentimes in this set with the refractors. You can tell the centering on this is noticeably off top to bottom. That's usually the most common instance there with the grade, is the centering is just way off on these. But a PSA 9 is a solid grade. No PSA 10s, but there is 26 9s. It's hard card to find in high grade. And honestly, it's not really easy to find in general. They just don't sell super frequently, but a PSA 9 sold recently. And it looks like there's a little bit of greening. It looks like a tricky picture there, but it did like $785 just yesterday. So when I picked this card hadn't really sold for the last few months. And then we saw one pop up yesterday and sell. But overall, just a big fan of the set and big fan of big players from the set. And there's a lot of these with no PSA 10. So I think the PSA 9 has become that much more important. I want to say Barry Sanders is in the same boat. I don't think he has any PSA 10s on the football side. So something to look out for.
I just look at him in that Giants uniform, and there's a lot of nostalgia that rushes over me as I think about just Barry Bonds and just some of those seasons. He had, tainted or not, hit the ball over the fence, and it got my attention as a non-baseball guy. Let's round this out by talking about the cards that are selling. Oh, this is something right here.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Take the wheel, Nick. I've never seen this card.
I hadn't really either. I had kind of seen it, but I didn't know much about it until it came in. This is the 1988 Cal card, San Bernardino Spirit. That was a minor league team that Ken Griffey Jr., some would call a rookie, PSA 10. So this was from his short stint in the minors, where he played for the San Bernardino Spirit. They came out with like a team set that they would release for like promos and stuff. I don't think you could like go and buy it in the store. I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong, people that are more in, have more knowledge on this card, but it's just a really cool one of the things I love about earlier baseball cards, like before we had Bowman firsts and stuff like that, was the minor league cards you would see. I just think it's super unique. Kind of the first glimpse of these players before they became what they became. PSA 10 is like somewhat low pop 79 for a card that has like 1800 graded copies, less than a 5% gem rate. So it's hard to find a PSA 10 or get a PSA 10 on this card, but it's still an affordable card. Like I want to say this does maybe around 750. So it's not, you know, nothing crazy in it. And you get a Ken Griffey Jr., an early Ken Griffey Jr. in PSA 10 condition. But he only had two minor league cards. We sold one of the other ones last week in a PSA 9. It was the same team, and I think it was a company called Best, and they made like a regular base and like a platinum that had like 1500 or 1200 sets. So it was a little more limited. That one sells for a little bit more, but this one's not far behind.
I just love, part of the reason why I love doing a show like this is you get introduced to cards that you've never seen before. And it's like, I haven't seen it, but I have seen it. It's like, that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah.
When I saw the photo, I just thought about like, by no means am I comparing my little league career to Ken Griffey Jr., but like the photography and the shot is similar to those shots. I took when I was in little league. So cool card. Definitely check it out. We're sticking with baseball. No, did I?
Yes, kind of.
Okay. Are we on the right?
Yeah. Scroll down to the Mariano Rivera. It's the last one. So if you're watching this in Brett's Patreon group, he just brought up the link, took him to five different Flair Showcase Legacy cards, because we have five different Flair Showcase Legacy cards auctioning right now. It's just a variety. So check those out. I think there's a Shaq, a Pedro Martinez, a Griffey, a Randy Johnson. Yeah. And then this Mariano Rivera, this is the 97 Mariano Rivera Flair Showcase Legacy row zero or row one. I'm sorry. Out of 100 PSA nine. It's a pop two. There's no PSA 10. So none graded higher. It's a couple $100 card max. So it's not a super expensive card. Serial numbered from the 90s. Always desirable. People know about the Legacy parallels. And has to be at least in the argument for best closer of all time. I think most people that were around at that time and maybe even weren't know about Rivera.
Yeah. He is a guy that was so dominant in his position. And there was this whole era, Inner Sandman, him coming out. Like there have been these moments where I have like danced around picking up some baseball cards. And he is one of the players that always comes top of mind for me, just because I think it's easy. Like it's easy. It would be an easy entry point to collect. I think he's the best closer ever, but I'm not a huge baseball nerd. He's just like, he's the closer I think about, but obviously a cool parallel that whether you collect football or basketball is recognizable to you.
Now that you say that, like, I feel like that was like the era of the closer. I don't know why, but it's like, I remember so many closers from that era. Like, do you remember John Rocker? Was it John Rockers?
Yes. The Braves? Yes. 100%. That
was like crazy. Yes. And the way he came out was like,
not a good guy.
Not a good human being. We do not endorse him as a human being, but watching him sprint from the bullpen to the pitching mound was quite the spectacle to watch.
There were certainly some characters. all right, moving into the next. This one I did take a look at before, and I don't know. Like I often say, the best rivalry in sports is Peyton and Brady. I feel like whenever I think about the opposition, it's usually the Magic and Larry Bird truthers, which it's really hard to be like, no, they're not, based on what they've done. Very cool card. What are we looking at in this one?
This is the 2004 Exquisite Scripted Swatches, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. Out of five, it's a BGS 9. So if you're not familiar with the Scripted Swatches, these are like jersey swatches, and they signed their autographs on the actual swatch. It's a staple card from Exquisite, or at least early Exquisite. It's you know, obviously to a much greater extent, similar to what we talked about before with kind of Luka and Trey always being connected. Like I think Magic and Bird were the original of those, you know, always connected just with their college connections and when they came into the NBA and the rivalry they had while they were in the NBA. But this is a card, there's five copies, there's five public sales of this card, but only two of the five have actually sold. Like this card is sold three times, this exact copy. So that's part of why I included it. I think it could go. When a card this rare surfaces this often, I think it's a great time to think about investing in that card if you're coming from an investment angle, or buying that card for your collection if you're coming from a collecting angle, because it's probably going to go lower than it will be once it stops surfacing, if that makes sense. It's still going to be a $3,000 to $5,000 card most likely, but early exquisite RPA of Bird and Magic. And I think it's just a very collectible and valuable card in the long term.
The next card is a Celtics player as well, who has a just as good a shot as anyone to win his first NBA Finals. We were talking about Jason Tatum. What is the card, Nick?
This is the 2017 Optic Black Velocity out of 39, Jason Tatum, BGS 9.5. I've always said my personal favorite ultra modern parallel. Like if you have never held one of these in hand, they are so sick. Like if you just hold it in hand and tilt it back and forth, right in the light, like the way the kind of whatever you want to call them, like boxes, lasers in the background, the way they just kind of come in and out of the picture is, I mean, it's a gorgeous card to hold in hand. Like seriously, my favorite ultra modern parallel. But yeah, Tatum is like, I mean, even without a title, like he has done so much in his young career. Like I think LeBron even talked about this publicly before. Like the kid's 25, maybe 26, been to multiple conference finals, been to the NBA finals. Like he's done stuff that LeBron and Jokic and Giannis and guys didn't do until they were 28, 27. So, I mean, he's still got a lot of career left and has already done a lot of things. And I think this is just a cool, rare rookie card of his that won't break the bank compared to some of his other rookie cards.
So what's fun about like a moment here I had with this card, it was on the list. And before I clicked the link to look at the card, I immediately, like, my brain visualized this like Tatum pose. Like, I knew that Optic Rookie, what Tatum's pose was and what this card looked at without the surrounding aesthetics and effects of the Black Velocity. And I don't know, like, it to me, starting with 2017 and just like this boomerang crew that's come back into the hobby and is, we're all who are listening and myself included, I feel like there is this segment and it's like Tatum year. It's like 18 with Luka. It's like 19 with John Zion, where it's like we saw so many of these cards that we know exactly what those cards look like. And it's like that those photos are embedded into our brains. And I'm not sure what that necessarily means, but I don't know. When you close your eyes and you think of someone's rookie card and you can visualize kind of what they look like, I think that's probably a good thing just in terms of nostalgia and just long-term long-term storage of value.
For sure, man. That's a super interesting point. And it makes me think of the whole Optic debate. Like, I think there was a time during COVID where people were really like excited about Optic relative to Prism and even Select. Like, I remember during COVID, there was like a really big argument for how Prism, Select, and Optic should rank, right? Because Prism is actually the most common of the three, depending on which Select tier you're looking at. And then Optic and Select were a lot more rare. There was just less cards. So I'll always remember those debates and those arguments. But it seems like Prism has definitely won over the last 4 years. But it's just something I'll probably always think about, like you said.
It's two other things. Other things on that. I think there was the pro Select crowd before Select went crazy of like how much more limited Select cards were. That was a talk track that I remember. And then the other one was pro Optic because Optic is the closest thing available to a Topps Chrome appearance.
Yeah. Yep. I remember it. I remember it vividly. And it's funny. We'll get off of it because it's not even a card we have, but just this year, I think Tatum's Select Courtside Silver, there's like two PSA 10s or something crazy like that. Two or three or four, something super low. It might've gone up since then, but yeah, 2017 was a sweet spot for Select. So that whole Select Optic Prism debate for that year specifically was really fun.
No doubt. All right, we're moving on to our last card, and we want to talk about 90s baseball nostalgia. These two were like joined at the hip, and to see them together here is fun. So what are the cards? What are we looking at?
So it's the 1997 Finest Embossed Refractor, Jeff Bagwell PSA 10, and then the Craig Biggio PSA 10. They're two separate listings, both ending Sunday on PWCC. But yeah, man, the Killer Bees, they were, like you said, joined at the hip. Like, you couldn't, it's almost impossible to think about one and not have the other one pop up in your head. Like, I remember Bagwell's like squat stance, batting stance, like his short, stout, stature and just hitting bombs, but could also run a little bit. Biggio was like, I mean, one of the best second basemen I can remember. And I was just looking him up just for fun. And I totally forgot he started as a catcher. And he actually made the All-Star team as a catcher and then switched over to second base and made the All-Star team the next year as a second baseman, which is the first time that's ever happened, which is insane. Both guys in the Hall of Fame. Just like, if you remember 90s baseball, you remember these guys. And it's interesting because they were playing through the steroid era as well. And as far as I know, they were never linked to steroids. If either would have been, it had to have been Bagwell, and only because he was hitting bombs. But as far as I know, there's no link to steroids with either of these guys. So if you're on the I only collect clean players side of the argument, then these guys are for you. Plus, both of these cards are like $150, $200. There's four PSA 10s of the Biggio. There's seven of the Bagwell. But ironically, this is only the second PSA 10 Bagwell to surface publicly. And the Biggio, I think this is the fourth to surface publicly. So they don't come up often. And then if you know about 90s you probably know about the 97 Finest embossed and how cool that design is, especially in hand. But just two cool parallels, a lot of nostalgia and super affordable.
We did it under 90 minutes, Nick. That is an accomplishment. And we've talked about 90s baseball for any of you baseball listeners who are just like holding on hope that one day these guys are going to talk about baseball. We're doing it here. We're talking about Lotso the Bear, the Hugging Bear.
Yes. Yes.
Smells like strawberries. And we're talking about his $1,000 red kaleidoscope Topps chrome card over here. So a lot of diversity. It is a melting pot here on Auction Talk. Nick, this is always fun, man. We'll do it again next week. It's like we've got our routine together. Excited to be back.
Yes, man. Had a blast and can't wait for next week.